Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
All right, everyone, welcome. This is episode one of Nothing Major. I'm Sam Querrey. I used to be ranked top 11 in the world. I'm now playing pickleball. I've currently got a torn Achilles. I've got three co-hosts with me. We've got John Isner. John won 16 titles, got to number 8 in the world. We've got Steve Johnson, number 21 in the world, Mr. College with 2 individual NCAA titles and 4 team titles. And then we've got Jack Sock, also former number 8 in the world, 4 titles, and currently ranked number 57 on the men's doubles tour of pickleball. So these are my co-hosts for Nothing Major. Jack's definitely much better than 57, but I'll flip it over to Isner. Our title, Nothing Major, what does it mean?
So I think it's kind of self-explanatory if you're having a little bit of problems with that. It is that 4 of us lack major titles, especially on the single circuit. Jack, notwithstanding, of course, has had a lot of success in doubles, but for the purpose of our podcast, we are not counting doubles grand slams as a grand slam title. So we're focusing strictly on singles here. And the 4 of us have a combined, of course, 0 grand slam titles.
Mike Bryan says it best. Every 10 majors in doubles are worth 1 in singles. Jack, how many doubles slams do you have? And we'll count mixed in this.
I have 3 men's doubles and 1 mix. I have 4 slam titles.
All right, so I guess Jack is 4/10 of the way to his way singles? To a singles title.
Yeah.
Title, yeah.
Yeah, I made it to like the, third round, basically.
Hold on, hey guys, hold on. Lest we forget a mixed doubles gold medal.
Very true.
What does that count for?
That counts for nothing. Yeah, Olympics and tennis, are like, they're cool, but they're not that cool. What are we going to talk about on the pod, do you think? What can the listeners expect from this podcast with the 4 of us?
First and foremost, the 4 of us are all really close. We've had our fair share of success on the tour. We really wanted to start something together to keep the camaraderie and the fellowship kind of alive. But for us, we would love to talk a bit about tennis. You know, we're not going to probably get into a lot of the X's and O's, but we're going to get into some of the fun side of things, the different side of tennis that maybe a lot of the listeners might not realize, of life on the road, how our lives kind of coincided with one another, and you know, some of the fun things that happen on the road that not everybody gets to see.
It's such a tough sport, I think, overall, that you don't really see the personalities come out all that often, especially when you're playing on tour. Watching guys on TV, you don't really know the behind the scenes stuff, what people are thinking, what goes into being a professional tennis player, and what it takes to do it. And then the relationships also behind the scenes. You just see guys go on the court, battle against each other, and then shake hands and call it a day. So I do think this is going to be a really, really fun insight to, I think we get along super well. The banter's awesome. And I think we've all had some awesome stories together. And so I think the fans will be, I think it'll be very, very fun for them. Probably want to learn more and hear more about everything we've been through.
Hopefully our followers, we want to get a lot of positive feedback from them, but we also want to get negative feedback and criticism.
Yes.
Ripping us, because I think the 4 of us endured a lot of that throughout our careers on social media, especially. And I think also this good thing, the 4 of us have pretty thick skin, not take it too seriously, not get too down on ourselves. So we want that criticism as well. We want people to make fun of us, because I think we can use that. It'll be great for the pod. So positive feedback, negative feedback, criticism, all that is welcome on Nothing Major.
Everyone's known each other for a different length of time on this podcast, but we've essentially all been friends for 20 years, some of us longer. Stevie and I have known each other since we were maybe 8 years old. But John, give me your first impression of meeting me and then Jack and then Stevie, if you can remember.
The first time I ever met you, Sam, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was the Aptos Challenger. I think I was still in college and you were maybe a senior in high school. But I didn't know that we would become like actual like best friends, you know, like in each other's wedding at that point. But thought that you were kind of goofy. Not that I was smooth by any means.
You can't be smooth at 6'9". It's never happened.
Yeah, 6'10", exactly. Well, yeah, that's
it's
a good
tricky.
Point.
It's tricky.
Trust me. No, I'm not smooth at all. But thought you were, for one, a pretty good tennis player. You had that Prince racket.
The Diablo.
The Diablo. Yeah, you were nasty with that thing. Stevie.
I want to see if John remembers this. I remember it pretty clearly, like our first real interaction.
Well, because look, I'm just older than you that we miss each other in college. Like, so when I finished college,
you're not just older than him. You're a few.
No, he said he's just old.
My point is I'm like 4.5 years older than him. So we miss each other in college. That's my point.
Oh, sorry. Right.
So when I finished college, Stevie was a senior in high school. Well, so we just barely missed each other.
Man, come on. I
hope I'm going to get this right. I'm going to say, the Newport event, when you first finished college, that's not accurate, is it?
No. Looks disappointed.
That's not accurate. Would you like a little refreshing course?
Yeah. Yeah, because you were playing tournaments while you were still in college.
Correct.
Oh, U.S. Open.
No. Prior. Okay. So John's really old.
I almost played you at the U.S. Open. I remember that. While you were still in college.
That's no? Factually incorrect once again.
Okay.
Would you like me to just continue?
Yeah, let Stevie just answer the question.
Yeah, please go ahead. Please go ahead.
So I'll finish John's story here. So look, I hate to pump John's tires because I like to make fun of him more than anything. But as a collegiate tennis player, he was somebody that you look up to. He blazed a trail of go to college for 4 years and then, be a successful tennis, pro on the tour. So my first real interaction with John was in 2011. I was just finishing my junior year, got a wild card into Cincinnati, played singles, was in the doubles, played with Alex Bogomolov in the doubles. It's 2011. So John's giving me some advice. He's like, look, I remember he's like, all this stuff. We don't have to go into what terrible advice he gave me back in the day. But we end up playing each other in doubles. And it was at the Cincinnati event in 2011. And it's on that small court. I think it's called the Porsche court now. It's very small, very narrow. It's like a little bowl. The crowd was awesome because John was playing with James Blake. So we're about 36 seconds into the match. I'm playing the ad side. Not really sure what I'm doing on tour, quite frankly. John misses a first serve. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to try and step up. Don't want this kick serve to go over my head. And then all of a sudden, there's 145 miles per hour, just absolute cannon second serve right at my body and almost kills me.
That court is lightning fast.
I saw my life flash before my eyes and I was like, I'm going to go back and play Arizona's number one, in a couple months because I can't. That's not a second serve I want to face all the time, really.
Another year of college tennis. Turns out you handle that second serve very well. But if I can move on to Jack, I think a good story about Jack is...
Oh, gosh.
I thought Jack was a total prick when I first met
him. I knew this was coming.
So I definitely...
Oh, man.
It was at the U.S. Open. I was pretty high ranked. And it was back in the old days when... Remember when the U.S. Open, you'd have Wednesday starts? Don't have that anymore, of course.
Yeah.
But the U.S. Open used to have Wednesday starts, and I played the week before. I think I did well, and I was lucky enough to get on that side of the section, the Tuesday, Wednesday. So I had the Wednesday start. I was the highest person in I was the seated person in my little section of four, my quarter of four. And Jack was there. I wasn't playing him first round. I had a potential matchup with Jack in the second round. I think you probably won Kalamazoo, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't remember. Jack was playing... The guy from Switzerland.
Ciunnelli.
Yeah, Ciunnelli.
Ciunnelli, I remember him.
Marco Ciunnelli. Anyways, very winnable match for Jack. But Jack comes up to me. Never met him before. He's 17 years old. Not that I'm some veteran at this stage, but he goes, oh, so you're the reason I'm playing on Wednesday. who the hell is this guy? Fast forward, maybe it was that same day. Maybe it was the next day.
Oh, gosh.
I was in the massage room about to get chopped by Keith, the great Keith Murray, who travels with the U.S. Davis Cup team. and I'm on the side of the wall, and Jack's on the other side of the wall, and he cannot.
It's a low moment. It's a low moment for me.
He can. He has no idea that we're like 2 feet from each other, just this thin wall separating us. And someone goes to Jack and says, "Jack, who do you play?" Because first round hasn't happened yet. He goes, "I play Isner second row."
You gotta fake it till you make it, right?
I mean, yeah, to defend Jack a little bit, Jack was like number one junior in the world. Kate, like, with Kalamazoo, you might have won Junior U.S. Open too. Like, you got to bring the arrogance in.
Yeah, but at that stage, I was praying that Jack would win because I really wanted to play him. I really wanted to play him, and he lost. But anyways, that was my first experience with Jack.
Jack, when did you and Stevie first meet?
Gosh,
Stevie knows. Stevie smiles like he. I feel like Stevie remembers the exact day he met everyone.
No. I'm just gonna say,
hey, Stevie, do you have a diary?
No. I just have a good memory. I would say between the four of us, like John and Sam are a bit older, very, you know, I would say different style of relationship. You know, at the beginning, obviously, I looked up to you guys figuratively and literally. But I would say Jack and I maybe had a bit of a rocky start.
For sure.
Contentious. For sure. Let's just say when you're two, you know, Jack is a couple years younger than me. So I'm a little older coming from college. Jack's, you know, obviously this massive force coming from the juniors, completely different route. Good. We shared a coach.
Yeah.
I would say it was contentious. You know, like we didn't like each other.
Yeah. I would say we even went into the Olympics playing together, not like even that great of friends.
Yeah. I would say that's pretty
accurate. Medal will bring people together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then obviously, like, you know, we both get a bit older, perspectives change, life changes. But I would say, yeah, maybe my first 2 years, like 2012 to like 15, like 16, like it was.
Because we kind of came in at the same time, although we're different ages slightly. We kind of came in at the same time. And yeah, I had spent some time out in Carson. Yeah, we shared the same coach and it wasn't the friendliest of relationships for a while. But I think that bronze medal changed things around. And I would say we've actually become very close and been great friends since.
Yeah. I say we should have probably bonded a bit more at the beginning. Jack had a coach, Joke Nystrom, a former player.
Oh yeah.
You know,
and fantasy hockey great, Stevie.
Fantasy hockey great, you know, Swedish legend.
Yes. Joke Nystrom.
Jack and I should have bonded over an afternoon practice at Carson. This is probably, I don't even know when you had him, 2013 maybe. And we're out there hitting backhand cross courts, and Joke had one of the best backhands in the world back in his day. And Jack and I like can't hit three in a row without a shank, a hosel. Like the disgust on his face.
You guys have two of the worst backhands. For sure. You can make the argument.
Someone's windshield wiping and it's going over the fence.
I'm going to give Jack. Jack's was like sneaky good, I think.
It would go technically maybe not good.
Yours has got awful, Stevie.
Stevie's is worse than Jack's. Yes, I think we can all agree on that.
And this is me making fun of someone else's ground strokes.
If anyone listening to this thinks that I have a good backhand, they should probably not listen, watch, follow tennis anymore because they are completely wrong.
But one of the best backhand slices to ever see a tennis court.
Yes. Yeah, that's for sure.
How do you define the backhand? I mean,
top spin, not good.
No, that's a good point.
You define it with topspin.
Not good.
Only reason Stevie had a pro career was that slice because it was nasty.
Tough times though, but like that's how Jack and I should have bonded over just like a tough like 2-4 at Carson. Like neither one of us want to be there, and we're just shanking backhands left and right.
Just trying to shovel backhands cross and can't do it. I have no idea what's going on.
Carson's where Jack and I met. I was probably like 20. Jack was playing the Easter Bowl when you were like 16.
Yeah. This was a crazy story, yeah.
And like in between his like, I must have been like quarterfinal and semifinal match or something, you drove all the way to Carson from Palm Springs, like 2 hours to like hit with me on the clay for like 90 minutes. I don't know why you did that, but.
Someone at USTA got a hold of my mom and was like, hey, you're looking for a hit on clay, well, mid Easter Bowl, which is on hard courts in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
I was super stoked, but my mom was also equally, I think, excited to go over and see because you'd been killing it on tour so far. So I think she probably averaged 98 miles an hour and got in like the carpool lane. We might have even taken one of those things down that when you merge over just to get there because we didn't have like enough time to get there to hit, but then I got there straight out of the car. Probably gave you a terrible hit, but yeah, that's when you're using the prints with the holes in it.
Yeah.
That you chopped me up. And then
did you win Easter Bowl? Did you go back and win Easter Bowl?
I think I did. Yeah.
Probably. And then Stevie J and I've known Stevie since, I don't know, he was like 8 or 9, like I said earlier. And for those of you who don't know, Stevie used to have a mullet until he was probably 16. I wish you still had it.
I would say it was probably till like I was like 13, and then I had just all long hair.
You were kind of like a little fatty with a mullet, like most of the way through juniors.
Bad.
Original JJ Wolf.
I got great pictures of me and Sam.
We can definitely find that.
No problem.
We got to find that photo.
Legitimately, like, that was like the haircut. It wasn't a shtick. It wasn't anything like that was.
When you went to school, was your mom like, "Oh, Stevie, you look so good today. Like, have a nice
day." No, I don't think so. I think, you know, it was like, you know.
She was embarrassed too.
She was gone because she worked early. She, you know, she was a teacher, so she was gone. So my dad, I think, was just like, get out of the house, dude. Like, go, you know, go figure it out and like, just get out. And then, you know, we'll see you later. But yeah, I cut it off at like, right before I got my license, I remember. So I was about 16, and then I've just been
stylish ever since.
Haven't looked back.
I know you have a photo of that, Stevie. So
I've searched for it before and I can't find it. So I needed to come.
Stevie has it.
I got it.
All right. Well, there's the cute stories of how everyone met. All right, guys, switching gears. I want to introduce one more member of the podcast. It's our producer, Charlie. Charlie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Sam. Yeah, I've known you guys for well over a decade now. So I think this next segment is it's going to be a good one for not just the fans, but also for you guys.
Ooh. We've
got a wide range of questions. You will each be picking the person that best fits.
Yes.
Feel free to write your name down or the name of a group member. We'll start with the first one. Who is the most frugal in the group?
Okay.
I actually think no one's really that frugal.
It depends.
I'm ready when you guys are.
Okay, let's see the reveals.
We got three Isners.
That's fair enough.
Look,
that's fine.
So he has more money than us.
I wouldn't necessarily say frugal. I mean, frugal's not a bad thing. I think it's kind of like a cousin to cheap, but like a distant cousin.
This podcast is also a place to air out any issues, you know, amongst the group. And I think I actually got a text from Stevie and from Sam yesterday. Consistent story. I think it might be from different viewpoints.
Oh, okay, this is great. Yeah, this is good. Yeah, I have no clue where this is going, but this sounds awesome.
This is between John and Sam. I'd like to get Jack's opinion on this as well.
Oh, gosh.
I have been a middleman of sorts for the last, let's call it 8 to 10 weeks. First and foremost, Samuel Query, our podcast host for the week, decided that his left Achilles was going to blow out while he was playing pickleball. That being said, there's an extensive rehab portion to this. And as we all know, we all have lots of rehab equipment, utilities. Look, our bodies are our careers. Long story short, John, great friend, says, Sam, let me send you this game ready. It can help ice your ankle. It can do all these things for you that you're going to need for your Achilles, you know, recovery. Very nice gesture.
Very nice gesture. It's a really nice machine.
I spent like $2,500 on this thing.
Yeah, so basically, long story here, but about a week, let's say a week, 10 days after John sends it, he calls me and he goes, hey, please don't tell Sam. But I sent Sam the game ready, sent him like the text of like, hey, like it's like $400 for overnight, $200 for slow shipping, yada, yada, yada. And all I got back was slow is fine. That's awesome. Okay. So we fast forward. John's a little perturbed perhaps by, he's like, am I going to get this money back? Speaking of the frugality of the answers that we just gave. And funny thing is a couple, like, you know, let's say about 10 days ago, Sam's over at the house at my house having dinner. And he's like, can you believe this guy? He wants me to like Venmo him like $125 for this. I thought it was just a nice gesture. I don't get what his deal is with wanting it back. He's made, you know, plenty of money his career. I'm a friend. He's just doing a gesture.
I just thought like John was nice enough to send the game ready. He then sent me like a picture of the receipt. And I was like, is that just proof you sent it?
Of the tracking number. It was a tracking number.
And I was like, there's no way he wants me to like Venmo him the $75 for this. I can see that he's made $22 million in prize money. So you want the $75? One of his best friends is having the worst week of his life. I'm at home with a torn Achilles. And then he goes and calls Stevie and is like, I can't believe Sam didn't offer to pay for the Venmo or the tracking.
No. It happened naturally in the conversation. We were calling about something else, surely.
It had to have been brought up by John, too, because Stevie wouldn't have known that you sent me the...
No, I brought it up. Fair enough. I brought it up, and it was...
That's, and so that's why I put you as my most frugal person. I wasn't going to put you prior to this event happening.
So, Jack, where do you stand? Where do you stand?
You got to pick a side.
Oh, wow. All right. I think, well, one of the worst weeks, days. I was there at the tournament when it happened. I felt I was devastated for you. But I think since it was never talked about, I think I got to err with Sam on this one because there was no conversation about it. But I think, Sam, I think you expedited back and then get the balance, the remaining balance between the slow to the expedite.
I mean, John's retired at this point. I might just sell it and keep the money.
You could probably get $1,000 for that thing, dude. Hey, but by the way, it works really well, doesn't it?
It's phenomenal. I mean, thank you for sending it. It's like the greatest machine. I use it every day.
You're welcome.
Well, I have a feeling this will not be the last of these. Moving on. Who in the group is the most emotional?
I'm good with it because I know it's not me. No one's writing me.
Yes, that's for sure not you. Okay, so I was torn between myself and Stevie, but I went with me because I, of all four of us, we were all, of course, at each other's weddings. I cried the most during our ceremony. So I'm going to give it to myself there. But I also wrote this little caveat on my answer, me, and also wrote definitely not Sam.
Yeah,
because he's sort of like a soulless monster. He doesn't like dogs, and I'll leave it at that. Not a dog guy.
I'm not anti dog. I don't dislike dogs. I just don't eat a dog. Like, it's a lot of work, and that's what I got to say about the dogs.
You have a dog.
I do have a dog. I care for her. I provide her shelter and food and water. And other than that, we kind of go our own ways. But we both do live at the house together.
I put myself, I would say on court, out of all of us, I'd be the most emotional, as you can probably have a compilation of many folded rackets in the repertoire of the tour.
I would, my answer would be fairly identical to Stevie's. I thought going on court, I feel like I would talk a lot of just back and forth with my team or my box, complaining a lot about stuff, numerous point penalties or fines, I guess, along with Stevie at times. So yeah, I wasn't scared to let out emotion on the court, good or bad.
Next one is, who is most likely to abuse or utilize that pro tennis celebrity?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right.
Come the answer.
Let's see what we got.
Oh, we got it. We got a mix of everything.
Ugh. Jack, me.
Is there?
Seriously?
Oh, you're
Mr. Highland Park.
That's Mr. Highland Park, exactly.
Yeah, Mr. Highland Park.
That's you.
What is that? What does that even mean? What does Mr. Highland Park even mean?
You're just like the unofficial like mayor of like Highland Park right now.
I'm a politicker.
You just love it. People see you, you're just, yeah, you give them like the little finger wave and just,
well, yours is easy. Yours is easier because people walk up and be like, you must play basketball. You said, no, I'm actually was a very successful tennis player. How can we do business together?
Oh, wow. I was confident I was not going to be on anyone's list there.
Half the group sees it, man. I don't know what to say. I see you're at the Mavericks games. You're at the Hurricanes games.
Oh my gosh.
But I don't.
Are you paying for these tickets?
No. Do I?
Never in a normal seat. Never a normal seat. Always a
box.
You're
not paying for the tickets. That proves our point. You're just using your celebrity status to like get access to the games.
It's a good point.
Right? You can't even defend that.
I like taking my son to hockey and basketball games. I'm using my celebrity status.
So do I. I don't call around town and be like, hey, former tennis player here, looking to get tickets.
Would you pay for a ticket and take
it? Of course I would. Oh my gosh.
For what it's worth, I think the mayor of Highland Park has a really nice ring to it. Next one. Who out of the group got the tightest before a big match?
This is a tough one.
This is hard.
Ready?
Ready.
All right. Let's do a reveals. John, who do you have?
But Stevie. Yeah, I don't feel that strongly, but I think I said Stevie gets the tightest. I think it's a pressure cooker on tour, especially for big matches. Everyone handles it differently. And
strong argument
this is
here.
Good. This is good stuff.
No, I'm just, it's a hard one. Like, yeah, I think we all got, like, I didn't say myself.
It's hard. Exactly. I think we're all in the same agreement. We're like, it's hard.
It's not a bad thing.
No, I said me. I didn't like take matches hard after I lost, but I feel like there were moments where like, you know, I had a couple chances to like possibly get top 10, didn't win those matches. I had a few finals. Looks like on paper, I probably should have beat and didn't win.
Sam, you stole two titles from me. Not many listeners or tennis fanatics would know that the last time two Americans competed in a clay court final in
was
Europe.
It Sam Querrey and John Isner?
Samuel Querrey, John Isner, 2010.
In Serbia, Belgrade.
Yeah.
Belgrade, Serbia. And I was up 6-3, 5-4. I served for the match and lost.
Great day. Great day for us all.
Great day for America, really, over there in Belgrade.
Everyone remembers the 2010 Belgrade final.
All right. So last one. Who had the most enemies on tour?
Oh, easy.
It's just so easy.
Okay. What does everyone say?
Oh, I put me.
No, it's answers.
Yeah,
Jack.
You're right. No, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right.
It's answers, Jack.
It's yes, definitely not you guys. It's definitely not you two.
Stevie had like a few people that really didn't like Correct. Him. But I think if you just pull the population of everyone, Jack would have the most.
I feel bad about myself now,
especially on the double score. But and trust me, I benefited a lot monetarily by being Jack's partner. But he rubbed some of the people we played the wrong way, and I had to sort of play the arbiter out there and kind of smooth things over.
No arguing Jack's level of commitment to tomfoolery on the double circuit.
That's true.
But he was also arguably the best one out there when he decided to play and wanted to be there.
He backed it up.
So, Jack, would you say this was more on purpose or were you just misunderstood out there?
I would lean more on the on purpose side than misunderstood. I don't think I don't think I just misunderstood.
I would agree.
I was hoping that was your answer.
Yeah, I didn't mind getting into it a little bit. Sometimes it fired you up if you didn't have the energy. Sometimes it was just fun, and that honestly was part of just my personality being out there.
Well, guys, I think we can end that right there. Stevie, bring us into our last segment.
All right. Well, this is a big week for us. We kick off the U.S. Summer Hard Court Swing here in Atlanta. There is really no better person to talk about this event than one of our lovely co-hosts here, Mr. John Isner. But before we get to him, I don't often enjoy pumping John's tires, but he has won Atlanta in 2013. 14, 2015, 2017, 2018, 2021. And, you know, so he's got 6 Atlanta titles. I mean, that's pretty impressive for a guy that's played it 13 times, a couple other finals. You know, what was it about Atlanta, John, that you love from a tennis aspect, a court aspect, environment aspect? Like what made Atlanta so successful for you?
You know, I really feel like I should have 8 Atlanta titles. I choked 2 of them to Marty Fish when the tournament first started. So very successful at that event. I don't know. I was just like, I'm a creature of habit. Like I love going back to the state of Georgia, obviously where I played college tennis. And, you know, I just have great support there. I love the courts. I love playing in the heat. It's really good for my game. I can, you know, obviously serve really well. Helps my serve a lot. And I can kind of save myself, I think, on return games, go for broke, try not to expend too much energy. I think the conditions were, I think, perfect for me, and I'm extremely comfortable there. I had a lot of support. All my friends and family from the University of Georgia would come and watch, and just kind of made for a great environment for me to play in. And I was lucky to never miss the tournament. Was always healthy when it would roll around. And I don't know, when I would win my first match, I would just get really comfortable, and I always seemed to find myself, you know, deep in the tournament, give myself a good chance to win. So I never could, you know, look, it's Atlanta. It's not the U.S. Open. Obviously didn't win that 6 times, but it's, you know, pretty cool to win one tournament 6 times. I was just very, very comfortable there.
Every reason you just mentioned is the reason I didn't like the tournament. Literally, like, there's nothing worse than going to it. I only played it 2 times. I feel like I was going to the John Isner Open. You're just overshadowed by all this success. Everyone, like you said earlier, everyone thinks you're from Georgia. I wanted to, like, stand up and be like, he's not from here. This guy's an imposter. Like, he spent 4 years of his life here. Like, they just, like, loved you so much. Like, why would I go to a tournament where it's just, like, it's good out of the way so I get a little glimpse of John Isner practicing? Like, it was just, like...
Because everyone loves watching me practice.
They did there. They did there. It was like a cult following you had at the Atlanta event.
Did you ever have a bad result? Were you just like a shoe-in for like the...
Last year I lost. Yeah, my body was just shutting down on me. But no, that was it. I made the finals three other times. I lost to Andy Roddick one time in the semifinals. I just always did well.
It's got 37-7 their lifetime. It's pretty good. You know, that's a good year for most guys. It's a really unbelievable year for most guys.
Yeah, I mean, like 37-7 is something you're just used to seeing from like Fed and Nadal and all various tournaments. But for some reason, I always did really well in Atlanta.
I went 1-2 with a win over Steve Johnson.
Correct.
Nice.
Yeah. So Sam, for you, buddy, what was your least favorite part of Atlanta other than, you know, overshadowed by John? Was it the heat?
He's not an Atlanta guy.
He's
not a South guy. He doesn't like the South.
I like the South. A lot of it was like that. You had to play like DC, Toronto, Cincy after that. And I just like some places you didn't play well during the year. Some places you played great, like at every event. And there was some places you didn't play great. And Atlanta, I was just like, I like Atlanta, the city. I just, the week of the tournament, I just, there was too much Isner everywhere you looked. And I couldn't take it.
All right, guys, that's episode one in the books. Any parting thoughts?
Can we poll the audience, Charlie, on our very small first episode audience on where they stand on the Game Ready Venmo misunderstanding, I guess we could say?
I like that. So listeners can look out for a poll over the next couple days on the Nothing Major Pod social channels, and we will read out the results in episode two.
If you get 51% of the people, I'll send you the money.
If you don't get 51%, do you also pay for shipping to get it back?
No, absolutely not. Come on, that's insane.
Do not send it back, Sam.
No. I'll ship it back. All right, that's it for episode one of Nothing Major. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and basically wherever you listen to your podcasts. Follow us on social, on Instagram, on X. We are @NothingMajorPod. See you next week.